Good morning, brethren and sisters and young people. The sad but very well-known story of Lot and his family is one that is extremely relevant to us today. We are those to whom the Lord Jesus Christ spoke when he said, "As it was in the days of Lot, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man." We are those to whom he also said, "Remember Lot's wife." And this story, though 4,000 years old, needs to be revisited constantly by those who are endeavouring to keep the truth in these last days. The story of Lot and his family is, I believe, put in the record as a direct contrast to the family policies of Abraham. Two families, two ecclesias, two different outcomes. And in that we have a very sober warning for those who are endeavouring to raise God's heritage in the 21st century. The characteristics of Sodom are well known to us. We often refer to them in our lectures. The Lord said they were marrying and marrying again. The phrase is in the continuous tense. They were marrying and marrying again. There were loose relationships. They had lost the sanctity of marriage. They were eating and drinking, buying and selling, planting and building, totally absorbed with the things of this life, with no thought for their Creator. Very simply, God was left out of their busy, selfish lives. And we know that today we have these conditions likewise with us. Today, eating is an art form. Fast foods everywhere, eating out, trading on a 7-day basis has also become an art form. Shops are everywhere. We are sold on the idea in this generation that we must have things to be happy. Our world is driven by markets, share markets, by the shopping industry and the advertising industry. Everywhere people are setting up themselves a higher and higher standard of living. And so it was in Sodom. But there was a sinister side to Sodom as well. The Bible says they were sinners before Yahweh exceedingly. And what happened in Sodom was a natural extension of the good life that they had enjoyed in that place. We also know the very familiar words of Ezekiel 16 and verse 49 and 50. "This was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did they strengthen the hand of the poor and needy." There was a selfishness about that society that then manifested itself in wickedness. They were haughty and committed abomination. You see, they thought they were beyond divine reproach, and therefore God took them away as he saw fit. And another great sign that we were living in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah is the arrogance with which they project their lifestyle. For the show of their countenance doth witness against them. And they declare their sin as Sodom, they hide it not. And both in your country here in America and in Australia, we have these gay Mardi Gras where they take to the streets in their hundreds of thousands to declare their sin as Sodom. They are no longer ashamed of that particular way of life. And it was to Sodom that Lot took his family. Lot's name means veiled. And perhaps it was that there was a veil of ignorance upon him that led him to the disaster which followed. But his beginnings were good. He left Ur of the Chaldees with Abraham. He followed the faith of Abraham to become a stranger and a pilgrim. They left behind a prosperous city in Ur to go into the unknown. At Haran he crossed over and left behind Terah and the others who would not cross over. And he went on to the land with Abraham. But then the trials of life came upon them. There was a famine in the land which made it extremely stressful for herdmen. They went down to Egypt to try and find some relief. And there was the great embarrassment of Abraham being caught out by Pharaoh concerning his wife. And disgrace for those who were the Hebrews of that time. And perhaps it was that incident in Egypt that shook the loyalty of Lot to Abraham, that here he was following Abraham and he brought them into disgrace in Egypt. And when we come to Genesis chapter 13, we find that when they came out of Egypt in great embarrassment, they also brought with them legacies that were to later plague them. We find, for example, in Genesis chapter 12 and verse 16, that Pharaoh sent them away, and he gave them sheep and oxen and asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. And so they came out with great substance, but there was now with them the things of Egypt that had added to their burdens in this life. And we know what the handmaids did for Abraham's family. And so we find that when they get back to the land, and the famine is still in the land, that they have a problem with their material wealth. At the end of verse 20 it says of chapter 12, and they sent him away, his wife and all that he had. And in chapter 13 verse 1, Abram went out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had. And Abraham was very rich. And so we find that there was this increase in material things that now began to create problems between Abraham and Lot. And we know that this difficulty in living in the land led to ecclesial strife. And so we find in chapter 13 and verse 7, there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram and the herdmen of Lot. And they decided that the time had come to part company. And it was Abram who made the very gracious offer. And remember, this was Abram's land. And he made the offer to Lot, well, you choose first what part of the land you want, and I will go elsewhere. I think it's highly unlikely that Abraham even included Sodom as part of the choice. But unfortunately, that's what Lot chose. Lot decided that he would go down to Sodom. And what we have in the choice that Lot made was a very great lesson that sometimes the apparently innocent choices of life that we make can have very big ramifications for our families. Lot was guided by what he saw. He was not guided by faith in the future. Look what it says there concerning the choice of Lot in chapter 13 of Genesis and verse 10. Lot lifted up his eyes. He made himself subject to the lust of the eyes. He lifted up his eyes and he beheld all the plain of Jordan, and he compared it to two things in his past experience. One of them was, it was as the garden of Yahweh. And they had come from the area of Ur of the Chaldees where the garden of Yahweh had been. It was also like the land of Egypt as thou comest to Zoar. So you see, he was making comparisons to what they had seen in Egypt. The other thing that he noticed, that it was well watered everywhere. You did not have to go through this problem of constantly digging wells down near Sodom, because there was water everywhere in that place. And so life looked simple and easy in Sodom. And he left Abraham and went down to Sodom. Now notice the progression that comes with Lot. There are six action words that go through this record describing Lot. In verse 13 we find, or verse 12, we find that Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain. And the record's already telling us that there's something different about their choices. Abraham was in the land, Lot was in the cities of the plain. And he pitched his tent towards Sodom. So Lot made a choice on the wrong basis. He beheld, he chose on the wrong basis, he journeyed down into the valley of Sodom, he separated from Abraham, he dwelled in the place, and he pitched his tent towards Sodom. So you can see that he was intent originally on continuing the pilgrim spirit down near Sodom. He wanted to have it both ways. He wanted to be near the city of Sodom, but he also went down there pitching his tent. So here's a person that decides that perhaps he can get away with having a bit of both ways. But we find by the time it comes to chapter 19, or even chapter 14 and verse 12, that Lot is dwelling in Sodom. In chapter 14 verse 12 it says, and that those kings of the north that invaded the land, they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and they departed. And so it wasn't very long before Lot found himself living in the city of Sodom. Well, you can imagine how this might have happened. There they were in their tents outside of Sodom. And his family would have wanted to go shopping in the city of Sodom to see the bright lights in that place. They would have shared the same wells as the Sodomites. They would have drawn the conclusion that these people seemed quite nice. There were invitations to go and to socialize with the people of Sodom. His daughters then found friends in the city. They met other nice families. And all of a sudden, living in a tent became irrelevant. And so they decided to buy a house in Sodom. The shepherds that had been part of Lot's ecclesia, no doubt instructed servants also originally, like Abraham's household had been, now found that it was more interesting to go off to Sodom in the evening and enjoy the nightlife in that city. As you never ever read, in all the 25 years that Lot was in Sodom, you never ever read of him building an altar. Starts off pitching a tent, very soon living in a house, but you never read of Lot having an altar around which his family life was based. For him, there was no record of worship or waiting in hope. They became assimilated with the society of Sodom, and they were soon entrenched, right down to the point that we find in chapter 19 that Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. He was elected to office. He thought that the best way to try and do something about the morals of the city was to become a judge. And so he found himself totally enmeshed in Sodom. There had been a warning in chapter 14. I believe the kings of the north that invaded the land in chapter 14 came for one reason only, and that was to warn Lot and his family that their policy of assimilation was not what God wanted for them. He was only rescued by the dramatic intervention of Abraham and his trained servants. And we saw in chapter 14 and verse 17 that Abraham tried to instruct Lot by the way that he treated the king of Sodom. Abraham's behaviour before the king of Sodom, walking straight past him to a fellowship with Melchizedek, and then coming back and snubbing the king of Sodom, was done entirely for Lot's benefit. He was trying to show Lot that you can't put yourself in obligation to these sort of people. The king of Sodom wanted the souls of people. And Abraham determined he would give, or would take nothing from the king of Sodom. Not one single thing would he take from the king of Sodom. And yet Lot ignored that warning. Now you'd have to think that Lot would have seen something about this to give him some indication that his policy was not right. Sodom hadn't protected him from the kings of the north. In fact, it had made him a target because he was there in that place that was increased in goods. And Abraham had showed him very clearly that you've got to step away from the king of Sodom. But he went back. Now, why did he go back? You can only imagine the conflict that Lot must have gone through. Why didn't he have the courage to say to his family, well, we've been taught a lesson. Let's go back to the hills where Abraham is. And there's a great lesson in that, isn't there, that sometimes as parents we have to make tough decisions. Sometimes it means saying to our children, no, you won't have that music. Or you won't have earphones on the radio in your room so you can switch to any station and us not know. You won't have those particular friends coming home. You won't go to those sort of places. And brethren and sisters, sometimes as parents we have to be prepared to make the unpopular decisions. You can imagine what Lot would have confronted if he tried to stop his family going back to Sodom. If he said to them, well, now's the time where you go back and we get our tent out again. It would have been very, very difficult. So he went back to Sodom. And for 14 more years, things went on apparently as normal. His daughters were now married to the men of Sodom. His ecclesia evaporated. Abraham, when the angel confronted Abraham and told him what was going to happen to Sodom, Abraham started with 50. He thought, well look, when Lot and I parted company, I had 318 trained servants, plus their wives and their children in my company, and Lot was a similar size, his ecclesia. There must be at least 50 left in Sodom. And he whittled the number down to 10. Well, there's at least Lot and his children and their wives. There must be at least that many left. And Abraham was content with 10. But the sad fact was that Lot's ecclesia was basically down to 2. And even one of them was not in the way of faith. And so Lot went back and he dwelled in Sodom. And there's the progression. He dwelt in Sodom, he returned to Sodom, he sat in the gate of Sodom. And in all of those things, he gave occasion to the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof. But we do know something about Lot, which the Bible tells us in the New Testament. And one thing we know about the Scriptures is that the Bible is always extremely fair in its assessments of people. And as much as we might look at Lot and say what a foolish policy it was for this man to go back to the city of Sodom, nevertheless, in the New Testament, we're told that Lot himself was a righteous man. We have the words of the 2nd of Peter, chapter 2, verses 6 to 8, and I put the words here from the Diaglot because they actually pick up some differences. Let's just turn that up, the 2nd of Peter, chapter 2, and verses 6 to 8. Here is the Bible's assessment of Lot. In verse 6, we're told that God turned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemning them with an overthrow, and made them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly. And he delivered just Lot, or righteous Lot, the man who was himself a righteous man. It doesn't mean that he was always a wise man, but he was in himself a righteous man. And the point of this passage is that God is able to deliver those who are righteous. But you notice in verse 7 it says that Lot was vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. And the word vexed there in the Greek means to be worn down. He was worn down by what he saw every day going on in that place. And then in verse 8 it says, for that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul. And that's a different word. That word means he was tormented. He was tormented every day with what he saw and heard going on in that place because of their unlawful deeds. And you find in the Diaglot that the difference is picked up quite accurately. He rescued righteous Lot, being grievously harassed with the lewd conduct of the lawless, for that righteous man dwelling among them was daily tormenting his righteous soul in seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. And so the Bible very fairly points out that Lot for himself could see what was right and what was wrong. But every day he was grieved and worn down and tormented by what he saw going on in that city. And brethren and sisters, in the age in which we live, we've got to feel very similarly about the world around us. It's a sad fact that because of the abundance of evil, we become accepting of the things that we see. We ought to be horrified by the parade of the sodomy that is in our society. We grow used to it. We begin to just laugh at it and say, well, isn't that weird? But we ought to be horrified, like Lot continued to be horrified in Sodom, by what he saw. The problem for Lot was that there weren't many others. In fact, there were no others that saw it the way that he did. And so the day of reckoning finally came. Let's come back to Genesis chapter 19 and see what happened when God sent his angels to rescue Lot and his wife. The angels came to that city. And Lot, sitting in the gate, noticed their regal bearing. He saw that these people were different to those sort of people who normally came to visit Sodom. He was fearful how they might be treated. He knew the character of the men of the city. And so he showed them typical patriarchal hospitality. He took them home to his place, we read. But I want you to notice in verse 3, he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, entered his house. And you've got to read the Bible carefully. It says, and he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. I want you to notice in this house, who's doing the cooking? When the angels came to Abraham, it was Sarah that did the preparation of the meal. In Lot's house, we've got a house husband. He is doing the cooking. His wife is nowhere to be seen when this meal is provided. She might have been out at the equal opportunity classes. Perhaps she was shopping. But whatever it was, she was not doing the cooking. Lot was having to do it for himself. And later on that night, when the lustful crowd came bashing on his door with the intent to take those men out and to sodomize them, as Moffat very clearly says about verse 5, when that happened in Lot's house, he was greatly embarrassed. He was in such a strait that he even offered the crowd outside the door his two unmarried daughters. I want you to notice what he said about his daughters. In verse 8, I have two daughters which have not known man. And later events seem to indicate that those girls were not nearly so innocent as Lot thought they were. But he offered his daughters to the crowd that he might protect the visitors under his roof. And we look at that and we say, what an incredibly stupid thing to do. When you've compromised yourself, you end up faced with impossible choices in life. And Lot was now faced with the choice of either his daughters or his visitors. And neither was particularly palatable. But the crowd outside would not be put off by Lot's offer. They said in verse 9, stand back. And then they said again, and I want you to notice very carefully these words, this fellow came in to sojourn. You see, they had picked up that Lot had told them he was a sojourner and a stranger. They said he came here pretending to be a sojourner, and now he wants to be a judge. Now he will needs be a judge, or as Moffat has it, he would lay down the law for us. He's now preaching morals to us, and we don't want to hear his morals. Sometimes when we compromise with the world, we think that they might then give us room and respect our consciences. Well, no, the world in which we live hates those that they regard to be intolerant. This appeared in our local paper. We have a Member of Parliament over in Australia who is doing his best in his own funny way to try and get some laws to restrict the internet and all the rubbish and the pornography that's on it. And this is the reaction we got from our local paper. And I want you to notice, you may not be able to read it, but I'll just read a couple of these things. Moral revival leads inevitably to the removal of personal liberties. It means a return to unjust and inappropriate community retribution against people the moral crusaders regard as offensive. This rise of public intolerance towards people and activities which do not conform to the strictest moral criteria is alarming. People should have the broadest range of choice about what they do, provided their activities do not indirectly impinge upon other people. Let them be. If this unhealthy trend giving moral crusaders too much influence continues, people's fundamental rights will be eroded. And you see, that's the position Lot found himself in. He got up and he said, look, what you're doing is not right. And they said, who made you a judge over us? We want maximum freedom to do what we want. Get out of the way or you'll suffer with them. And you see, moral crusaders are not wanted in society anymore. We live in a society that preaches tolerance, tolerance, tolerance. You can be anything you want, except intolerant. You can have any value you like, except having absolute value. And that's the problem of society that Lot and us have to live in. And so they rejected Lot entirely. And they began to break down the door. Well, we know what happened. The angels rescued them. But before they did, they gave Lot a chance to go out and to speak to the members of his family who were not there. Now, I deduce that if Abraham was satisfied with 10, that very likely Lot had the two unmarried daughters, two daughters who were married with sons-in-law, which makes 8 altogether with Lot and his wife, and possibly a couple of sons elsewhere who were married. So, very likely there were at least 10 in the family of Lot. But the angel said, well, you go out and you preach to your children, Lot. And that was a very gracious thing to do, because they didn't want Lot going for the rest of his life thinking that God never gave his family a chance. And so they said, you go out and preach to them. You go and try and get them to come, because we're going to destroy the city. Well, we know what happened. In verse 14, Lot went out and spake to his sons-in-law, which had married his daughters. Now, the angels also mentioned sons and daughters in verse 12. And so you get the impression that Lot went out to speak to all of his family. Probably at least four of his own children, plus the ones that they'd married who were not in his house. And he spoke to them, and he said, up, get you out of this place. Yahweh will destroy this place. And they laughed at him. They thought it was all a big joke. They weren't even willing to come back to Lot's house and see the angels for themselves. I mean, surely he would have said, look, if you don't believe me, come back and talk to the angels. They weren't interested. They just laughed at him. And he would have got to the stage of tears in begging with them to come. And they weren't interested. Why weren't they interested, brethren and sisters? It was because of Lot. When all our choices and our steps in life have accommodated Sodom, don't be surprised if your children don't want to hear your preaching. They looked at Lot and he's talking about Sodom being a wicked place and Sodom being a place that's got to be destroyed. It's time to leave it. And they're saying, but you brought us here. You're a judge in the city. And all of his choices had accommodated Sodom. You came back here after we were rescued. Why are you telling us now that it's no good? And you see, Lot had given them no vision, no sense of values, no example of a separation. They had no respect anymore for Lot and his righteous principles. And in the end, we read in verse 15, the angels had to almost forcibly remove them. And Lot was given a chance to leave that city with his wife. Very graciously, the angels accept his request that the city of Zoar might be spared. And both Lot and his wife got into that city before the destruction came. They entered into Zoar. And then she went out of the city of Zoar to look at what was happening back where her children were. What a sad picture it was for the family of Lot, that almost all of them were destroyed, and his daughters that were saved showed themselves of no moral virtue whatsoever. And we have the wife of Lot, a very well-known story. It's a grim warning for every one of us. And the Lord said to us, brethren and sisters, she's the one that we have to take notice of. Remember Lot's wife. Chilling words for this generation. Because some of us are going to find that when the time comes to walk away from this life, to leave behind the things that we think that we're not attached to, we're going to find it's harder than we actually think it is. And the Lord's telling us to remember Lot's wife. But who was she? Have you ever noticed that in the patriarchal families, right down to the sons of Jacob, right through the family of Ishmael, right through the family of Keturah, that in every generation we know exactly all their names?